Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday morning. It is the 12th of January, and it's very nice to have you with us. 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. A lot to talk about this morning, a busy day and a busy news week ahead, of course. We're only day two into the week. Still a lot going on, and we will talk about a lot of it this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you, and we'll get started, get the process underway. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I've been up for 6 hours, and I'm pretty good, pretty good.
How were the first 6 hours?
You and I have been on the phone several times discussing
various things. Yeah,
various things, and it's terrific that we're here. We didn't know if NPR, who is not always forthright with us, was going to be preempting the day or not. Turns out they weren't.
That's right. And but they will be tomorrow, we believe. At least that's what we're being told. So that is good. We'll talk about what's going on here. But obviously, the impeachment vote is we're going to have a 25th Amendment vote, I think, today, and then tomorrow will be the impeachment vote, and that will be the talk of the town, as they say. Though there's a lot of things to talk about in the town today. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo is in the house. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I've been up for about 6 minutes. Lots going on, yes.
Well, you're well rested and ready to go. That's good. We also welcome the Empire Report's J.P. Miller. J.P., how do you keep track of it all for your site?
Joe, it's a lot to do, and I've been up for 5 hours. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Do you really mean that? I mean, in other words,
no, I take him at his word.
I do. I'm happy.
Great,
because you sound like the epitome of happy.
Oh yeah.
No, I am happy. I promise.
Just saying. Okay, and we have a newbie. We have a new panelist this morning. We're very excited. We welcome public health worker, social worker, community social activist, and youth advocate Barry Walston to the program this morning. Barry, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great. It's a new day, Tuesday, and looking for more tomorrow.
Yeah, that's kind of how we all feel. So tell us a little bit about yourself, sir. Introduce yourself to us and to our listeners, if you would.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you all. Been listening to this radio show for a while, and find it very provocative, very engaging, very thoughtful. I've been a part of the Albany for over 30 years. I've had various roles, worked for the state government. My primary function, I think, through life is just to be a good public servant. I ran for the school board. I'm very active on community boards and really just committed to making sure that, you know, the voice of the voiceless that is heard, and that those who are disenfranchised and marginalized, that someone stands in their stead to make sure that there is justice.
Well, you're doing God's work, and we thank you very much for being with us this morning and helping us along and trying to understand some of the issues that we discuss. Let us begin. A reminder, you can join in, panel at WAMC.org. So the House plans to vote demanding the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, seize Trump's powers. The resolution calls on Vice President Mike Pence to wrest the powers of the office from President Trump if Mr. Pence fails to act. An impeachment vote is scheduled for tomorrow. The House could vote as early as tonight to formally call on Vice President Mike Pence to strip President Trump of his duties by invoking the 25th Amendment. The vote comes a day after House Democrats introduced an article of impeachment charging the president for his role in inciting a violent mob of his supporters to storm the Capitol, where rioters ransacked the seat of American government and killed a Capitol police officer. The motion on Monday set off a high-stakes standoff between two branches of government as House Democrats pressured Mike Pence to intervene. If he did not, the Democrats promised to vote on Wednesday charging the president with, quote, inciting violence against the government of the United States. Republicans on Monday objected to unanimously passing the resolution, which asked the vice president to declare Mr. Trump incapable of executing the duties of his office and to immediately exercise powers as acting president. Meanwhile, when it comes to the 25th Amendment and the role of the cabinet continues to dwindle down in number. Chad Wolf was the latest to say enough and to leave, although many look at that as a positive move, given our current situation in regards to Homeland Security. Alan.
Well, as the guy once said to the tuna, good luck, Charlie. It is not, in my mind, it is not even feasible that this vice president, even though he's been terribly screwed over by this president, is going to turn on him right now. After all, there's this Republican base, and if he has any hope, he, Mike Pence, has any hope of getting ahead and staying ahead, I think he doesn't, but let's assume he thinks he does, then he can't turn on the president, and he won't. But Nancy Pelosi, being brilliant, has done exactly what she should do. She has basically said to him, it's your job, you should do it, and to hold him responsible for it. Now, I don't think he will, but, you know, I think he should. After all, the president has turned on him. The president isn't talking to him, that's for sure. And the mob was unleashed against Pence. So if he didn't have enough motivation before that, he sure has it now. But he's going to be cowardly and he's not going to do anything.
Rosemary Armeo.
Okay, well, first of all, goodbye to Chad Wolf, the worst Homeland Security or security officer of any sort in the country's history. On his watch, he was illegally in office, and then on his illegal watch, the Capitol is invaded. So goodbye. He should have been fired, not given the opportunity to quit. But Pompeo, I hope he's the next to go. I wish he had left before yesterday when he declares Cuba a terrorist organization, unlike our president, who was known to be a terrorist now, which will make it difficult, although not impossible, for Joe Biden to undo and return to normalcy, which is what we should have had years ago and would have, except for Trump. I think Trump, the reporting is extraordinary about what's going on with him. Pence has real reason to invoke the 25th Amendment. It is not political. The man it's totally unable to see. If you read the Washington Post reporting, which again is extraordinary and deeply sourced, he was completely unable to see what he had done, what he had unleashed, and the horror of it, the implications of it. He did not act. He has not governed really since November 3rd, but now it's increasingly bad. And there's real evidence that the man is incapacitated. I just have no doubt that a month or two into his forced retirement coming up, we're going to hear that there's a medical diagnosis of his dementia or mental disorder, whatever it is. He's just not right.
Well, there's a lot of places to go. I want to hear from Barry and JP, but given there's been no forthcoming nature of any medical news from the president, why would you think we would get that information? Not that I disagree with you that it may be the diagnosis.
It'll be the sort of thing like Reagan, you know, where his family will announce that we want your understanding and your privacy at this difficult time. And yes, there were no signs of Alzheimer when he was in office. This is completely new and different. That's what we'll try to get. There aren't leaks all around the president.
Which people in his family do you think are likely to speak out? other than his niece
I'm
and
not
his
sure
sister.
If it'll, his niece for sure. The niece
yeah,
for sure.
Well, we know. Well, we know that already. But they don't count. Do you think you'll
well,
see
sure
Ivanka? You think you'll see Ivanka or no. the others stepping up?
I don't care, nor is it important. There has been no problem getting leaks about what this president is doing and thinking in the 4 years he's been in office. Why would that change?
Well, you know, Rosemary, there was a great piece this morning that I saw that said that the president was part... Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Sorry.
It is, oh, boy. I get it, Rosemary. I get it.
So, sorry.
Yeah, I'll bet. So anyway, it's funny how when I start to talk, the cuckoo starts going.
It is kind of uncanny, yes.
It is uncanny. You have a little button there, right? You push it every day. Here comes Alan.
I do not.
Okay, please, but there was a party. There was a party. That was what was so interesting that is being reported today. Right before the chaos began,
right.
The entire inner family was together having a party. And if that isn't one more nail in the informational, concept that they were all in on it, forget it.
Barry Walston.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everyone has said everything. It's unfortunate that we're at this juncture 9 days before a celebration that we have to kind of make another transition, right? And the unfortunate part is that how do you hold an administration, a government, accountable? I definitely believe that, Pence is complicit, like the whole Republican Party is complicit, right? They could have stood up and said, made statements, have made some other overtures to at least show that there is some level of dignity around or some principles around the Republican Party. We have two parties. However, no one really has done that in a way. And even when we look here in New York State and thinking about the New York State workers and just New Yorkers, that there would be a cry out that, for this state, we want to do the right thing. And so it's just all bizarre. It's unfortunate. I don't think any of his family outside of the niece, they have nothing to lose, right? You're talking about entitlements. You're talking about privilege. And you're talking about a system that continues to support white supremacy. And we have people who literally benefit from this. So then what becomes their will to release that power? So there are just lots of complications. There's a lot to unpack. However, I do agree with, what everyone has said prior to this. And we just have to, it's like holding your breath and waiting to exhale and not suffocating.
So I have a question for you, if I may, because it's a tough question. We are hearing from the FBI now that the state capitals are going to be under the same kind of duress that we saw at the Capitol. Now, let's just assume that a huge crowd shows up, tries to crash into the Capitol building in Albany, New York, and you are the governor. What would you order? Would you order that if they did, they got shot?
No, of course not. I guess for me, you have to contextualize things. I actually thought about that. I said, Governor Cuomo, New York State, been here for over 40 years, what the will of the people is, what the will of the state is, as opposed to, I'm from North Carolina, born and raised, what would that look like when you talk about the Capitol, right? Part of that is some historical underpinnings that's in that space. So I think here in New York State, would that happen? Would our leadership be that bold and reckless to do that to New Yorkers? No, right? I would not do that. I would not have created that space for that to happen. There can be dissension, and people can protest. And we've had those instances where that's happened in New York State, not to the degree that we've seen, you know, at the Capitol.
JP,
I'm not sure if I answered exactly what you said, but
No. I think it's a serious question. Should the people at the Capitol, should the police have shot in the Capitol to stop the mobs?
Well, they did, right?
Well,
yeah, they did.
Not really.
But I think there were some people killed complicit a woman. In that.
Yeah, one woman, but the mob had its way. They were not stopped. The question I've been asking people is, should they have been stopped? And what were the means of doing that? Now, you say, of course not. You shouldn't shoot them. What short of that could you do? Now, I'm sure Andrew Cuomo's going to have the National Guard out there. I'm positive of it today. But what happens if somebody's so crazy go.
We have to go take a break, but go ahead.
Your own question. I think you're answering your own question, Alan. Had they been properly prepared, the mob would never have gotten into a position where they were threatening lives and, yes, deserved at that point to be shot. I wish they had shot more of them. I'm glad they didn't have to. But that's the whole problem, is that they got into the building in the first place because of horrible preparation.
Because of some complicity.
It would look bad.
Because of some complicity.
Yes.
We have to pause.
Yes, exactly.
We have to pause there.
Sorry.
We're gonna take a break.
I'm pausing.
And we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, JP Miller, and Barry Walston making up the panel this morning. JP, your turn.
Joe, I agree with the panel that the 25th Amendment option is very unlikely at this point, but I do think that there is a slight possibility. And the reason for that is, you know, if Pence were to do this, he would not be signaling it to the press or to elected officials. And for him to do it, it would need to be a surprise attack to get him out. And we don't know who is calling Pence and lobbying for him to do this for the good of the country. I imagine that, you know, maybe, you know, who knows, maybe former President Bush or other Republican, you know, donors are saying you should do this for both the good of the country and the good of the Republican Party. So I agree that it's unlikely, but I still think that it is possible. I don't think that he feels any more loyalty to Trump Trump, you know, dropped his loyalty to him last week. And I think Pence is very upset with that. And I also, I do see a little bit of a silver lining here. And that is, if you'd asked me 8 weeks ago after the election, who was the most likely Republican nominee in 2024 for president, I would have said Donald Trump. He outperformed expectations on election day. He has broad support amongst the Republican Party, and I would have said he was the prohibitive frontrunner for 2024. That has changed dramatically since the events of last week. You see the Wall Street Journal, you see Fox News, you see Chris Christie, you see Mick Mulvaney, you're going to continue to see Republican support erode for him, not just among party leaders, but also in the polls. You're going to see his approval rating is already down to a historic low, and it's going to drop even further. I think it'll be likely in the mid-20s by the time he leaves office. And so there is a silver lining, I believe, in that he's unlikely to ever hold elective office again.
You know, JP, you have really hit on something here, and you know, nobody has more respect for you than I do. I mean that, but because you know the Republican Party so well, you really have hit on this relationship between the Bushies and the Trumps. The Bushes clearly have been behind the scenes here, pushing like crazy, and the people that reported to them and were their vassals, if you want to use that word, have been coming out with the anti-Trump stuff all along. That means that the former president W has allowed this to go forward and has in fact encouraged this to go forward. How important is that?
You know, the Republican Party, while Trump had, I say had because I don't think he has anymore, he had near universal support among the Republican Party. It is not made up all of those nut jobs that you saw overtake the Capitol last week. It is a coalition of foreign policy hawks. It is a coalition of religious conservatives. It is a coalition of fiscal conservatives and what I call law and order Republicans. The law and order part is very essential to the Republican Party winning elections. And when you lose the law and order portion that they've been building for 100 years with a mob overrunning the Capitol and attacking police officers, that is a huge, huge, huge damage to that coalition of what I call the Republican Party base, which, I think is moving quickly, quickly away from Trump. You don't see it so much in the elected officials. You typically see elected officials are a couple weeks or a couple months behind popular opinion. It takes a while for it to get through their heads what's really happening in the world. And over time, I do think you're going to see more and more elected officials distance themselves from Trump. And Trump's support 8 weeks ago, it was a mainstream position. He got 73 million votes. That is a mainstream position. It is going to turn into a fringe position for these senators like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz that you are a Trump supporter. I believe it's going to go from mainstream to a fringe radical position to have any association with this guy.
JP, then how come so many cops were in that crowd showing their badges? And, we do know that people who are attracted to law enforcement often have a rather right-wing approach. Not all, because some are really great and wonderful, decent people. But, there were an awful lot of cops in that crowd that went in there. Now, you say law enforcement may be turning. I'm not so sure.
I think you'll continue to see law enforcement be identified as conservatives and Republicans. I could see, though, specifically Trump, him losing a significant amount of support from law enforcement. When you see the videos, there was just a video released yesterday of these rioters beating police officers with flagpoles. It's some of the most disturbing video that I've ever seen. And anybody that sees that, I can't imagine that these police officers around the country are going to stand by this guy after seeing that video. Not that they won't continue to be Republicans, but they will not be Trump voters. They will not be Trump voters in a potential 2024 presidential primary.
Well, I hope you're right.
I would like to ask about, there was a meeting that took place between Mike Pence and the president yesterday. It lasted about an hour. It was in the Oval Office. Oh, to be a fly on the wall for that one. Rosemary, I mean, I don't know. Do you think there was pressure or a deal, or what do you think was going on?
I don't think that Pence really pressures Trump. That does not appear to have ever been.
I thought it was maybe the other way around, but yeah.
but perhaps there was some discussion feeling him out. Like I've said all along, the 25th Amendment is that would be a bigger black mark for Trump. He doesn't like being disgraced. So was Pence talking to him about, look, you need to resign, sir. And if you do, we'll do a pardon. I'll do it as soon as I'm sworn in. So there's some deal like that going on. And JP is right. We don't know what is McConnell doing? What's Graham doing? What's Ivanka and Jared? Who are they talking to and what are they cooking up? He is quick running out of options. I mean, this impeachment can go on. And it looks like Pelosi has the votes, and it will go on even after he's out of office. I think that one more thing that I'm concerned about, and we haven't talked about yet, so I want to throw it into the mix, is I think that there's danger on Inauguration Day.
Yeah.
That seems to be it's not just in at the
U.S.
Capitol, but there's plans. Yeah, the U.S. not just at the U.S. Capitol, but there are plans for Biden Harris to go to Arlington to make a symbolic, appearance with our fallen. I think that's really kind of scary. And if anything happens in the state capitol, I mean, I don't understand Biden either. I want him to just say, okay, let's forget this whole inauguration. It is kind of silly anyway. It has been for years. And I'm just going to go in and go to work because there's a lot to do.
It's very concerning information that the FBI released yesterday and of looking at what is being said and the acts that are being planned. And you do have to wonder as to how that unfolds, because it just means everybody has to be on high alert throughout the country. We have a number of letters, and I'd like to get to some of them before we go to a break here, and then we'll move on, and when we come back, we'll get to the rest of them. Allison says, Alan touched on this in his morning commentary, and I'm astonished I haven't heard about it more. In my region, many Trump supporters have ties to law enforcement and the military. I won't be at all surprised when we learn that many insurrectionists flashed a badge or similar credentials to Capitol Police and were treated differently and differently as members of the quote-unquote brotherhood. The stench has to be pretty vile when Deutsche Bank steps away from you. That did happen, and that is certainly a fair point.
And, you know, the Deutsche Bank thing is interesting. I'll be right with you, Rosemary. But, the Deutsche Bank thing is interesting because the woman who was the loan officer for Trump was out 2 weeks ago, more than 2 weeks ago. And that was a symbol that there was some real change and embarrassment on the part of Deutsche Bank. Now, along with all the other banks, they see the corporations and everybody else turning on Trump, and now they show some guts.
Rosemary?
I think that's true. I wanted to go in a different direction and say that the letter is correct, except it did not go far enough. Yes, many policemen are former military and thus, of course, kind of expectantly pro-gun. That's fine. There is also a strain of racism and KKK involvement and other groups in police forces throughout this country. And so we're seeing the two big crises, excluding COVID, the two of the big crises of our time, the rise of white supremacy and horrible racial treatment by police of minorities coming together. And I hope that one of the results, one of the reforms that will come out of what happened Wednesday will be that we're going to take a closer look at who we're letting into police forces.
It doesn't get any worse than a Confederate flag being hauled through the Congress.
Yeah, I understand that police are now making a sweep on Facebook looking for help and identifying that guy.
Yeah, one of the people that one of the main perpetrators who they have not yet identified. So we got this letter. Why is it okay for police to shoot a black man in the back for simply walking to his car when police hesitate to shoot while watching brother officers being violently assaulted by a white mob? Barry, thoughts on that?
Well, violence is not, you know, justifying any type of violence. This is a system. This is the America that has created all these levels of systems that have not worked towards or for marginalized communities. But this is part of our history. And so, you know, I was listening to JP, and where I guess, you know, when we look at parties and we talk about, you know, was it Christian for these acts to continue to happen under the representation of the Republican Party? It was unchristian. It was not directed towards any true law and order as the Constitution has framed. And so when we don't examine kind of what people stand for and what they're out there, what they should be doing in protecting our government, our, you know, our democracy, our Constitution, it's all a fallacy. And so, no, it's not okay for any of this to have happened, for it to breach, the fact that they breached the line when we've had similar protests of people of color that didn't even get to across that line, and we've had experiences where they were forceful and making sure that they didn't cross that line, that line was for white supremacy. And so when white people get insulted and affected or assaulted by their own kind, then it becomes a huge issue. And it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that there's this, all these ironies, that there are these fallacies, that there are double standards, like all these things that don't work for the good of the people. And that's the unfortunate part.
Let's take
it's not okay violence, period.
True enough. We're going to take a break there. No, go ahead.
I wanted to add. Well, I mean, I think there's one other element to this, and we're hearing it again now. So let's move on. Let's talk about unity and move on and try to get past this. And that is what this country has done, and it's part of the reason we're in the shape we are now. The war was over. The Civil War was over. Let's forget about slavery, all that little thing. And now race keeps popping up because we have never stopped and confronted it and examined it. And that is one of the reasons that I think Trump needs to be held accountable, and that means, yes, punished.
We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue with letters, and we welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable, to our panel discussion. Nice to have you with us. And let's see. We will go with letters here. We have a lot of letters. I was just collating them. So here we go. Brian says, saying, I wish they'd have shot more of them. Just sounds ridiculous. We're civilized. They can go to court and jail. Be careful of the violent rhetoric. John says these violent thugs have never had a cause or a stage in their lives. Trump has given them a voice and a stage. They will show up for the inauguration and they will be armed and they will shoot. They now feel that they have some sick leader's permission to act as they wish. Foil these idiots. Move the inauguration to Camp David. Let's see. We go to Denise. Elise Stefanik does not support impeachment once again. I wish you would get her in the congressional corner and have her explain her seditious behavior. Well, that the invitation is always out, but
I would like to speak to that if I may, Joe. Yes, indeed. We ask her all the time to come on. She won't. Everybody who listens to the Congressional Corner knows if I'm criticized for one thing, it's for being too nice to these folks. And she would get the same reception that everybody else gets. But she's just scared to death to do it. And that's clear to me.
We go to Mark. Why is it okay for police? I read that one. I'm sorry. Here we go. I'm a peaceful person in general, says Carol Ann, but I agree with Rosemary. Of course, lethal force should be used if armed insurrectionists attempt takeovers of a capital. A terrorist is a terrorist, whether homegrown or from another country. I refer to this as a coup d'etat. Oh, and you have a cuckoo. That's good. A coup d'etat. Because these terrorists accomplish their behavior of confusing us because they add a comic aspect to their sedition by dressing in bizarre costumes. Do not be fooled. They are Trojan horses.
Well, there does seem to be a little bit of a dispute, intellectual and nicely done, between Rosemary and Barry. Barry says violence is an anathema. We shouldn't do it. On the other hand, if they're lined up and they are going to take down our capitals in New York or in Washington, Rosemary seems, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Rosemary seems, you got to do what you got to do, and that includes shooting them. Barry, I think, said no. Where are we on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I wish that there had been an officer with a gun who could have stopped the person who bashed that Capitol police officer with a fire extinguisher, or who had fired at least into or at the crowd that was smashing the officer with a flagpole. There comes a point that's what we give our police weapons for. I'm not a Second Amendment advocate at all, as you know, but we give the police awesome responsibilities. And that situation was one case where they were to discharge their responsibility. Now, they could not, for various reasons. I don't want to impugn them. I think they were in a horrible position. But no, I have no problem using violence against armed invaders of a sacred space.
Gina,
that was a very dangerous situation.
Gina writes, and I want to hear from Barry, but Gina says, the first face coming through broken glass in the U.S. Capitol should have been shot. Repeat as necessary. They were not protesters. They were terrorists intent on murder. So, yeah, Barry, let's talk. Being a nonviolent type myself, it's a hard one to kind of grapple with.
Yeah, it really is. And I guess if we know that police are trained to shoot to kill, then that's a pretty kind of straightforward, simple thing to do. However, if we understand that trying to save someone's life or to save something, that perhaps you could just, I'm befuddled why police officers don't shoot to lame as opposed to shoot to kill.
Yeah.
And so I'm still not a proponent of violence because it begets nothing. It creates more negative energy for that family, for that country. It just continues to trickle down. You know, Rosemary, when you talked about a sacred space, I agree. I mean, the fact that there was no deference at all, but because it was incited. However, these are people you would imagine that had some kind of understanding about the relationship, the symbolism of all of that went out the window because of entitlement and privilege. Because they heard from one person saying that they would be protected in this experience, in this process. And so it goes back to kind of what is the psychological impact that America has had with all this that's been going on for the last 4 years. Like, it has really impacted the psyche of America, and mostly white Americans are continuing to think and not understand where entitlement and privilege sits in these spaces and how these systems continue to perpetuate that. So then now that the laws have backfired and they're not protected, it becomes a huge concern.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, there's a lot to unpack. No, you know, shooting people and killing people is not a good thing for humanity. Protecting in the way that one does it, yeah, there are other ways in which that can be done in order to prevent and stop that.
Barbara writes, Martin Luther King Day is days away. Is there nothing we can learn and apply to our present situation? We go to Tracy, who says there are reports that all 50 states should prepare for armed protests on their capital on Inauguration Day. Not all states allow open carry of firearms. Anyone showing up openly carrying a firearm in these states should expect to be arrested, correct? Well, no.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope, but not necessarily. Melinda says the reason there wasn't more law enforcement in the Capitol, the reason the mob wasn't shot as they invaded, they were all white Trump supporters. Let's see. JP.
To add to that, I think that you're going to likely see a bipartisan 9/11 commission style report on what happened last week. And a big part of that is going to be the law enforcement component. So far, one Capitol Police officer has already been arrested, two are suspended, and there are 17 under investigation for conduct during the invasion. Obviously these police officers weren't prepared. Were there people that were, were there police officers that were potentially sympathetic to the rioters? And also to defend the police officers for just a minute from shooting into that crowd, they were vastly outnumbered. They're in a crazy situation. And as I look at the videos of those mob, the rioters and the mob people, I'm thinking in my head, like, every single one of them are armed. They look like gun-toting crazy people. So that, I think, had to be going through their minds as well, that they were outnumbered and they look like a bunch of armed insurrectionists to me. Maybe I'm wrong in labeling how they look, but that's what would be potentially going through my mind if I was one of those police officers.
But to your point of the commission looking into something of why were they so outnumbered, I mean, that being the big question, especially when we're hearing from so many agencies that had the opportunity to be there and were told they weren't needed. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have many more letters. We have other topics to discuss, and we will do all of that. Ray Graff is here with news, and we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Barry Walston, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters from a lot of people, so I'm going to get to as many as I can. Panelists, if you want to jump in, please do as I go through the letters here, and then we'll move on to some other subjects. Quick reminder that we will have part two of the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo's State of the State address happening at 11:30 this morning, so we will go to that as soon as it begins. Edward writes, canceling the inauguration of the Capitol is a ridiculous idea. Cancel it or move it, and the mob wins. This, above all inaugurations in our history, must go forward. Do anything else, and what we have, I can't read the last word, but okay. So
I agree.
You agree.
I agree. Yeah, you saw the Senate come together and certify the presidential election the night that the mob overran the Capitol. I thought that was a great show of strength for our country. And I agree, Joe Biden and our country cannot cower to these lunatics. He, as a symbolic measure, I think has to take the oath of office as he should on the Capitol steps and not show fear or allow them to win in that way.
Bob writes,
wow, I think that's macho baloney, really macho crap. This is what part of the reason we got into trouble on Wednesday was because they didn't want the optics of an armed guards keeping people out of the Capitol. And look what they got instead. And the risk here is just too great and completely unnecessary. We're talking about letting Biden begin unhampered, having him shot at. If there's any kind of disruption, that's it. That's the his message is not heard. His address is not heard. He has more of a chance to say we are in a terrible situation and we are going to deal with it. I'm starting to work right now. We don't. Why didn't he that walk down Pennsylvania Avenue and cheering crowd and all that pomp? And Trump isn't going to be there. So there is no real. It's a myth that right now we have a peaceful transition of power. We do not. So why not err on the side of safety?
I agree. Yeah,
we should ask them for their list of demands, and whatever they want from us, these lunatics, we will cower to them in the name of safety. Whatever their demands are, we can ask them for a list of demands, Rosemary, and say whatever you guys want, we'll agree to it.
Sounds like macho baloney.
Well, now that you mentioned it, I always thought it was silly that we didn't negotiate with terrorists. Why not get their list of demands and expose them for the silliness that you think is so obvious? People writing and saying it's ridiculous and it's obvious. It is not. Not to all of us.
Barry?
I think it goes back to, so I guess what resonates with me, Rosemary, you talked about something that was sacred, right? And you talk about the space and honoring the Capitol and the space. So the inauguration is the same, is part of that experience. It's part of that being symbolic that you have a Capitol building. You have the work that has been done by our forefathers, and you have a process and experience. I agree that there should be a risk assessment. However, the inauguration is symbolic and has been, it's not so much about the practice. It's about honoring what people have done to get to that point. And so how do you get away from that, and how do you continue to think that that sacred space should have some ceremonies around that? So just to, I'm just curious that you said, the mob could not respect, that space being sacred. How do we continue to lift that up if we don't show
the inaugurations were not always in the Congress, in the Capitol, and that the ceremony has grown into an enormous, ridiculous spectacle. Witness Trump spending more money than any president in history 4 years ago. We don't need inauguration. We need the oath of office. We need the justice of the Supreme Court holding out the Bible and giving the pledge to the United States. And you need a stirring John F. Kennedy kind of speech. That's the heart of the inauguration, and that would not be lost.
I agree with that. Okay. Thank you.
I'm glad we can work things out on the program. This is good. We spend quality time together.
I like this new panelist.
Yeah. all right, let's see. We'll go to Jay in your discussion of the troublesome behavior of the Capitol Police. Please don't forget to mention there were also heroes. Officer Eugene Goodman, the black officer seen in videos retreating up flights of stairs as a mob pursued him, actually led the mob away from the unsecured room where legislators were being hustled into. He looked down into the hallway, saw the open doors, then shoved the lead terrorist in the mob in order to make sure the focus was on him instead of the open chamber, and led the angry mob to the opposite direction. He literally put his life on the line to save the lives of elected officials. Eugene Goodman is a hero whose name should be celebrated. That from Jay. Let's see. We'll go to Bob. We now have a report in the Washington Post that Trump watched the whole invasion of the Capitol on television for hours and would not respond to pleas from those surrounding him for help stopping the violence. I'll just interrupt the letter to say that the reporting in the Post says that there were lawmakers who were on the floor who had the president's cell number who were calling him and saying, please do something, please do something. Back to the letter. It would seem that he was so transfixed on the violence exercised in the name, in his name, that he simply could not respond. And what does it say about the his advisors who were so subservient that they could not literally sit on him and demand action?
And what did he hope to get done here? Did he really think that the election would be overturned by this show of these fools and this force? Did he really think that? That's what I can't get into my head. Rosemary, what do you think?
Rosemary, are you there?
Remember Rosemary? She used to be on.
She used to be on the show. She was popular, and she had worked out
Can
one of her.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, now go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
JP has taught me how to use the mute button on my phone, so I'm trying to reduce cuckoo and cat noises, but I can't do it fast enough.
Okay, so my question.
I think that's a really interesting question, Alan. And I think that what he thought was he had to hold his Republican colleagues in line, and if they saw a show of support and power and the magnitude of his base, it would be a reminder to them that they could do something, that they could vote in favor of those complaints about the election. That's what I think. I don't know, and I think it's important to criminal prosecution to find out what his intent was. And I don't think he really did expect what happened to happen, but I also don't think he minded it at all, and he heedlessly and recklessly brought it about.
Do you think he has the guts to pardon them all?
I do. Yeah, that's what I suspect will happen. It's one of the reasons I want him out fast.
Jim writes,
he'll also pardon himself. He is criminally liable at this point as well, and it would be from states. So it could be held against him, and I think he's worried about that. So did Pence talk to him about that? Say, let's go over the possibilities here.
Let's see. This is from Jim, who writes, what if Kamala Harris were president and she wanted to take her oath of office in public to show strength? Would Rosemary still think it was macho BS?
Rosemary,
still on?
Rhetorical question. I'm not going to answer that.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair All right.
Enough.
Let's see. This is just a. You want to take a timeout and just. I want the panel's reaction to this, but so Harvard's Institute of Politics asked Elise Stefanik to leave its advisory committee because she, quote, made public assertions about voter fraud in November's presidential election that have no basis in evidence. So Stefanik declined to step down, and Harvard now said that they will remove her. She just put out a statement, Elise Stefanik just put out a statement, as a conservative Republican, it is the rite of passage and badge of honor to join the long line of leaders who have been boycotted, protested, and canceled by colleagues and universities across America. Harvard is bowing to the far left. The decision by Harvard administration to cower and cave to the woke left will continue to erode diversity of thought, public discourse, and ultimately the student experience. Yes, Alan.
I can say, look, I'm no Elise Stefanik fan, that's for sure. She won't come on. She won't face WAMC listeners. We know that. Nevertheless, we do invite her, and she's still invited because it's important to hear from everybody. Shame on Harvard is what I say. Shame on Harvard. If they knew what they were doing, they would not have put her on in the first place. But they did. And that's another issue.
It is another issue, but and, a good issue. Yeah.
And there are people who they should have let into that place that they didn't. That's all I'm going to say.
Alan? Or I'm sorry, Rosemary?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, Alan, say that again. No, Rosemary. Hearing not, we'll go to JP.
I agree with
Thanks
Alan.
For teaching Rosemary how to use her mute button, by the way.
I'm sorry.
It's coming in very handy this morning. Go ahead.
I also agree with Alan that I think that Congresswoman Stefanik has an untenable position over the last couple of weeks with regards to her, opposition to the will of the American people. That being said, as Alan says, Harvard University and all universities should have a diversity of thought, and they, Harvard is not exemplary, obviously, in having Republican voices, and I do think that they're a little tougher on the Republicans than they are on the Democrats.
Anyone else on that? We go to Edward, who says, Mary, who says, I have read that sedition is a more expedient charge against the president. Is this true? We go to, does anybody know if that is true? David writes, police should only use violence.
I think what she's referring to is that there's talk about using a little known section of the 14th Amendment that would keep anyone who has committed sedition from ever running again. It would be an automatic way. It also only requires a majority vote. So it's, in other words, it's much easier and faster than impeachment, but it's never been used before. And basically it was written to refer to Southerners who had been part of the Civil War secession. So it's it would be tricky. It's sort of like self-pardon. It isn't going to happen automatically. It's going to end up long, drawn-out fight in the courts. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Pete writes, Russ writes, the impeachment is a dead letter. More to the point would be an inquiry into why Cruz and Wangford disputed the certification of votes in five states. As of yet, no one has challenged them to provide credible evidence of their claims. If it is shown that they presented false or spurious evidence to the Congress, censure would be in order.
Censure doesn't achieve what many people want, which is that this guy doesn't get to run for president of the United States, since he is, in their minds, guilty of sedition. And so if you censure him, you know, they did that with McCarthy. As you may remember, not that long after he died of throat cancer. I don't think anything has to do with they don't have anything to do with each other.
But it's basically
Senator Sherrod Brown is also after expulsion for Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. And I think that's important, too. Not just censuring them, but throwing them out. He does not think they're fit to serve in the Senate anymore. And that will be an interesting debate.
It won't happen. Come on. They're not going to throw out sitting senators because of their political positions. I'm not for them. I can't stand either of those guys. But it's not going to happen.
Chris,
I don't either, but both of us, Alan, can sit back and enjoy the debate about their perfidy.
Right.
That will be part of the record.
Gotcha.
Does anyone on the panel, writes Chris, know if there is historic significance for January 17th, one of the dates that is being said of concern for possible terrorist acts throughout our country, or is it just when the insurrectionists and their day planners had a free time? Does anyone know that? It's the Sunday before the inauguration. Okay. We go then to Kathy with dozens of credible threats against our elected officials in D.C. Where is the GOP? I'm hearing nothing from the Republicans urging Trump to tell his minions to stand down and stay home. Where are they? Are they unaware how close each and every one of them came to being killed last week? Alan, I'll throw that one to you.
Of all the things that are disgusting about all of this, it's the fact that those people who should have taken their American citizenship over their political interests, nothing has been more important than that, as far as I'm concerned, and it shows you too much of who these folks are. I mean, would you rather have your would you rather go down in history as a guy who, you know, who screwed over the American Constitution than as somebody who wanted to hold on to his office and pleadingly and holding on for dear life and getting his name on his tombstone? It's disgusting.
Barry?
I agree with Alan. Okay. I watched I watched the Sunday shows this week, Meet the Press, and ABC, you know, this week with George Stephanopoulos. There was not a single Republican up there talking, you know, defending the president. It was Mick Mulvaney trashing the president, Chris Christie trashing the president, Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania trashing the president. A lot of Republicans trashing the president, but where are the defenders? Why aren't they standing up? If, you know, if he should be defended, why aren't they willing to have that position? And it's obvious is that they can't defend the president's position, but they want to be silent because they're scared of a potential primary. They think his supporters have a lot of power. And I was shocked that that these senators that are defending him will not go on TV and take questions and actually try to create a case for their defense of the president.
And JP, where were all of those so-called heroes, the Toomeys and the other guys, up until this week? They were solidly, solidly behind
this president. I would like to point out that Jim Jordan did stand up and publicly defend the president and said that he did it by not mentioning the president, saying Democrats are wrong to be forcing this whole get him out of office when he's going anyway and we need unity.
Barry, anything you'd like to add?
I was just, you know, I thank you, Alan, for talking about really American citizenship. What does that look like? And, yeah, they were all shamelessly not present. It blows my mind that these are people who have families, who are attached to communities, who represent states, represents communities, and that in that experience, no one thought to say, wow, you know, as a citizen of this country, almost lost it. Like, it was almost taken from me. If it had not been for those brave people who, you know, stopped this. And this is all the result of one Donald Menace. And, you know, I just, this image comes to me. I used to work for Auburn County Probation. And he really is an incorrigible juvenile delinquent. I don't know if people remember Judge Cheeseman, but he was one of the, a very old judge, a judge here in Albany County who almost became like my mentor. But, you know, Donald reminds me of this incorrigible, delinquent child who just never, ever got all the things that he needed to become a healthy individual. And as I look at all the as we look as a country at all the decisions that he's made and kind of how his protective factors, his monies really didn't, like all his whole kind of journey through life, it really did not afford him, I guess, this human spirit of being what American citizenship should look like. I just kind of convoluted, but he just reminds me of this really bad Dennis Menace, Donald Menace, and this incorrigible delinquent that just won't go away until you place him into a spot.
And all the spots where we want to place him.
That sounds like a review of Mary Trump's book.
Oh, okay.
Lorraine writes, so Q is the 17th letter of the alphabet, hence January 17th. QAnon, you see. Don't you get it?
Or as Festus would say, don't you see?
Don't you see? Let me see. Jim writes, Harvard was correct to remove Stefanik. and the diversity of thought argument is specious unless we are willing as a nation to accept the disavowal of objective reality as a mere political opinion. Harvard must remove a willful denier of fact and truth from their ranks. It would be the same if she declared that the sun rises in the west and gravity is a conspiracy. That said, Allen is right that she never thought, she never should have been appointed. Her appointment was probably the result of a desire for, of all things, diversity of thought. And let's see, we have just about 2 minutes before we go over to a break. Oliver is writing about Trump's mental capacity. Exhibiting extreme sociopathic behavior does not count as being mentally incapacitated, much to our country's detriment.
That's a very good point. You think about that, Joe. We've raised this on this program many times. Is a murderer who is clearly crazy and ordered a murder off the hook because he has mental incapacity? The answer from our courts is no, he knew what he was doing. Now, one could apply the same standard to Trump, right?
Right. On that subject, Harry writes, Harvard has the right to exclude violators of the 14th Amendment. Then we have another take on the 17th that I think it's just the Sunday of a 3-day weekend. So that is less conspiratorial, but would be another answer to the question that we asked. Dave said at their one debate, Trump acted like he wanted to destroy Biden, not debate him, when he angrily berated Biden for questioning his intelligence. Don't ever do that. I thought he was going to hit Biden. It was scary. It's scary to hear he enjoyed the attack on Congress. He needs to be removed. Anyone who brags that he won't lose votes for shooting someone on Fifth Avenue or takes out a full-page newspaper advertisement to lynch 5 teenage boys knows he's the voice for complete lawlessness. That from Dave. Let's see. Gary said, could we put aside the completely useless speculation regarding the rules of engagement that will be in place in the next week and a half? Whether any of us would pull the trigger is not important. None of you or of us knows what the rules of engagement are. What would we do or think we should do is irrelevant. Law enforcement units will follow the rules of engagement. Anything further is gratuitous auditory clickbait.
I don't agree with that at all, to be honest. Not surprisingly, not to be short about this, but the fact of the matter is that the population, the American population, has to decide what's correct. Do you shoot? Do you not shoot? How do you protect our sacred institutions? At what cost do you protect them? I think that this is not something that you leave to the police to decide. That's for, parentheses, sorry about this, damn sure.
Yes. Anyone else on that? Rosemary?
Nope.
Okay.
I love Rosemary.
JP or Barry? We have a minute.
Nope.
Okay. Excellent. Fantastic. Thank you all for helping me out. I appreciate it.
I'm good.
I'll read another letter. The GOP members calling for healing is only a major stalling tactic. The Huffington Post has reported that the Democratic legislature has been briefed about 3 planned attacks in the Capitol, Supreme Court, and to protect Trump and the White House. The plan to execute Democrats and liberals to put Republicans in charge, frightening and chilling forecast of what is yet to come. In sorrow for our nation, writes Diane. With that, we will take a break, and when we come back, we will wrap up for this morning. Alan Chartok, Barry Walston, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller make up our panel this morning. We do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We would love to hear from you. And again, keep your letters short and to the point. We'll get to as many as we possibly can in the time we have left. panel@wamc.org. A couple stories I want to get to before we end this morning. We only have about 15 minutes left. I want to talk about the rollout of the vaccine overall, but especially what happened in New York yesterday, which I don't think there's a local newspaper in the state that isn't reporting some sort of kerfuffle in people trying to get through and to get their appointments to get a shot. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is recommending vaccinating everyone over 65. The Department of Health and Human Services will try to accelerate lagging distribution as deaths from COVID-19 have soared to their highest levels. JP, talk a little bit about it. It was one of your key stories this morning in the Empire Report.
Yeah, there just continue to be stories from all over the state about problems with the vaccine rollout. And the New York Times especially has had a lot of stories about, you know, unused vaccines being thrown away because they're not able to get into the arms of people that are on the governor's list. And, you know, that is and by the way, all states are having trouble with the vaccine rollout. And I'm going to defend the governor a little bit here in that he was the first one many months ago to talk about what a big undertaking this was going to be and how problematic a vaccine rollout is going to be. So Governor Cuomo foreshadowed this. That being said, it has been a troubled rollout in New York. I was very excited to hear yesterday during his first part of the State of the State, he said what we're going to do in New York is create a queue, create a list of people who want the vaccine so that we have a list of people where when at the end of the day there are a bunch of vaccines that are unused that are about to go stale the next day or 2 days later, that we have a list of people who are ready to take them. I think they're going to get it right eventually here in the next couple of weeks, but right now it looks really bad. There's a big article both in the Albany Times-Union and Gothamist today talking about the troubled rollout of the vaccine program in New York.
I mean,
here I am, 79 years old. I read that New York State has, Governor Cuomo has said anybody over 75, especially somebody with a comorbidity, should get it. Then they do the same thing. Governor Baker does the same thing quite correctly in Massachusetts, where I live, because I can't get it in New York. I don't have that license plate, that license number. And I try to find out where to go. It's like a kid who says, yes, Timmy, you can have all the chocolate you want, but I'm not going to tell you where to get it. And that's what's happened. There's nowhere. You can't figure out where you go. I call the local hospital. The operator says, we'll let you know. You know, that kind of thing. It just needs to be clear.
It is the story that so many people related yesterday, exactly what you described, Alan, where all of these various portals went online, but in many cases they were giving out information of testing sites, not of vaccine sites. There were very few places that you could actually book an appointment. Most places told you a number to call, and that number may or may not have been where you actually, if it was a pharmacy, it may have gone to the local, to the county health department. If it did go to an actual pharmacy and that was the site, if you contacted the pharmacy, they didn't actually know that they were even doing it or they were getting the vaccine in some
cases. Absolutely right. That's
so right. It's, it's bad. And I agree with JP. It'll get worked out, obviously. But it does seem like it could have been a little bit smoother, at least to avoid, to know how much you have and how much has to go out the door before you start having people make calls and give them, as you say, Alan, that offer them the candy.
But in the meantime, they're going to be dead people. That's what's interesting. In other words, nobody, we all want the vaccine. Those
right.
of us who want the vaccine want the vaccine. Every day that you say you can't have it because we don't know what we're doing, somebody is going to die. That's a terrible thing to think, isn't it?
There's also this thing that is some people that I know yesterday who got appointments then were sent later. I know of one case where somebody was sent they called up and they had an appointment for a site which was quite far away, maybe about an hour and a half to drive.
Wow.
But they had the appointment, and then later in the day they received a note saying that even though you have an appointment, you're not guaranteed that you'll get the vaccine. That doesn't seem good either. So
CYA, right?
Right. Exactly. So it seems like a lot is going on. Rosemary, how much of this do you think improves under the Biden administration, and at least with the fact of wanting to get all of the vaccine that we have out?
Well, I think a lot of things are going to improve. He actually talks to the governors, not at them. He is willing to listen to the experts. I like this idea of forcing more production and then opening up all the supplies to all of the state and relaxing the rules a little bit so that a vaccine is ending up in arms and not in waste cans. That, as you point out, is just really crazy. I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done, and it's kind of drowned out in the confusion of startup right now and convincing people to get shots. This is in minority communities. It's in people who are afraid of needles. I'm trying to convince my own 95-year-old mother that, no, you should not just take your chances with this. So I think there's a lot of work to do, and Biden will not be his operation, while better intentioned and probably likely to be better coordinated. It's not going to be perfect from the get-go. I think you just have to know this. And even Cuomo tried very hard in his news conferences at the end of the week to say, listen, my own mother, I told her, Mom, you can call, you can get an appointment, but you're still going to wait 3 months. And that's a hard message, because the vaccine is, of course, a matter of life or death for us.
Why should she wait 3 months? He just just said if you're over 75, you get it.
Well, they're saying it's going to take 14 weeks to satisfy that one B group.
Sign up if you're 75. If you're 75, you can sign up. It doesn't mean you're going to get it this week.
I see. Okay.
Right. Just essential workers. So I will say to all of you all that there are some complicated kind of systems that are in play here, having been intimately involved with the mobile testing site for COVID. There's a lot of coordination that happens. The Department of Health, I think when people talk about vaccines and think about testing, we have the city, the county, and the state departments of health that are interacting, that are managing places to go, people to put in those places to kind of coordinate all these efforts. And clearly, as JP has said, the governor has had foresight about thinking about what this looks like. And the rollout, because we just got it, there are going to be a lot of blips. And having intimately being part of the system, there's efforts on the state level to create these vaccine pods in respective communities, respective agencies. But again, I just know that they put one up at SUNY Albany. SUNY Albany has the mobile testing site. Now they're doing a vaccine pod up there. And again, it's accessibility, making sure that people are able to get there. It's a lot of coordinating, a lot of moving parts, not making excuses. We don't want people to die. We want people to be vaccinated in a very safe way. And the weather doesn't help either. So there's just a whole lot.
There's certainly,
I offer that to say, be hopeful.
be hopeful that at some point. Owen writes to us and says, remember the old Westerns where the sheriff would enter a saloon where a brawl was going on and shoot a couple of shots into the ceiling? That always got everybody's attention. Maybe a few shots over the head of the mob would have quelled it better than shooting to kill initially?
You never know. You don't know.
D writes, violence and retaliation is the language of Trump and MAGAs. Impeachment, I fear, will ignite more senseless action, but backing down is an admission of defeat that they find unacceptable. I wonder how will this end?
No, it's tough. It's tough to know what's right. I keep thinking this, you know, okay, so the law enforcement people are being severely criticized for not being more aggressive, shooting, in other words. And yet, if they had shot, would it have exacerbated the situation even more? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Alan writes, the far left is often mentioned on the show as equivalent to the far right. I know who the far right are. Who, pray tell, is the far left? Antifa notwithstanding. You want to take that one, Rosemary?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I don't believe that Antifa is an organized force the way the Proud Boys are. I think it's like an inchoate group of
maladjusted people, and they are as bad. I just don't think they're as prevalent or as dangerous at the moment, and it's definitely a distraction to be talking about them when we have visible proof, a la Wednesday, last Wednesday, of the imminent threat from the extreme right. So could we pay attention to that first, please?
But isn't
one more thing about this whole violence thing. The whole symbolism of the inauguration, the way it became such a spectacle, is because it's a symbol of a peaceful transfer of power. That's lost. As somebody said on TV, that horse is out of the barn. So why not now really change this? If Biden wants to get in there and get to work, he should not be risking any sort of a show of force or violence, or for that matter, an expense. He could make a statement saying, here's my speech. Here's the Chief Justice. And all the money that would have gone into, what is it going to cost to secure the Capitol right now after what happened? And that money instead could go towards, name anything, police reform. It could go towards healthcare. Really, if you want symbol, could we please have a new symbol that means something, that isn't just, as I say, just poppycock. It's just stuff that we think we should do it that way. We don't have to do it anyway. Okay, I'm done.
No, I'm not going to cut you off, especially when you use poppycock. Alan?
No, I think we are in a tough situation here. We have to decide how we're going to do this. If they come in and try to bust up the New York State Capitol, I think force ought to be used. I do. And I think the same thing in Washington during the inauguration. I think compelling arguments have been made on both sides of whether we should have an inauguration or not. But in the end, I sort of think we should. One way or the other, maybe inside the Capitol, maybe outside the Capitol, but you don't give up, as they didn't give up on certifying the Biden election the other night. So, I do think there has to we have to continue with that.
Mm. Yeah, and I just you hear what the mayor of Washington D.C. is doing and pleading with so many people not to. Issue any permits for protests, and trying to keep it as safe as possible, and to keep people from even coming into the city. And I don't know. Hopefully, they'll be able to do that. And it doesn't. It's not lost on me too that we had the entire Republican convention on the lawn of the White House, and we didn't have these concerns, security concerns. We've always done a lot in Washington.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's
because
exactly
the guys behind, you're quite right, Joe. The guys behind it, who were threatening the whole situation, weren't going to be crashing the White House lawn. Unbelievable.
Right. So I will end.
The extreme left wants a cleaner environment and a safer place for people to live in the United States. They don't put on guns and carry Confederate flags onto government property. That's why it was safe for Trump to hold that ridiculous Hatch Act violating convention that he also was not held accountable for.
Mike gets the final word with this letter. Don't suppress the cuckoo or the kitten. We love to hear from Rosemary. The clock and the cat enhance the experience.
Yeah, but why does the cuckoo always come on when I'm on?
Timing. It's all timing.
Freddie and Marley, thank you.
Alan, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, Joe.
Barry Walston, thanks for being on the show. Great job. Rosemary Armeo and JP Miller, thank you. We'll be right back.